Welcome to Inspiring People and Places, where we interview national leaders in the architectural, engineering, construction, and development industry in an effort to educate, innovate, and inspire industry professionals to disrupt the status quo, improve their project teams, and steward public and private investments more effectively. I'm your host, BJ Kramer, President and CEO of MCFA. Allow me to introduce today's guest. All right, Inspiring People and Places. Today, we're going to hit the innovation pillar of the podcast, where we're going to dive into a little bit of technology for the real estate owner's rep construction management world. I'd like to welcome Adam Stark to the show. Adam, how are you?
Doing great, BJ. Thanks so much for having me, man. I'm excited for this conversation.
Me too. And before we jump into your background, I do want to give a shout out to your own podcast. Can you tell us a little bit about your podcast?
First of all, thank you for that plug. I definitely appreciate it. So we just recently launched, really excited for the purpose of the podcast, which is to provide veterans in the built environment with a roadmap of how to transition well, or just advice on transitioning between military to civilian to professional, i.e. built environment. And then the second part of it, our intention of the podcast is to also provide those translatable skills, military to professional career. And in that process, what we're doing is essentially run in chronological order of stories, right? Childhood, military experience, those transition phases from military civilian to professional, and then also touching on those translatable skills. So really the hope there is to kind of just give roadmaps, right? Just give relatable experience to other veterans so that just going through those periods, you can hear someone else talk about how they got through those periods and kind of apply that to their own experience and hopefully go through that a little bit simpler, a little bit easier.
Good stuff. So let's start there. How did that become a passion project for you?
I love it. So, you know, I was thinking about how I can start a podcast on my own. I just start, you know, good conversations and such, thought about my own experience and, you know, just thinking about how difficult those periods were, transitioning, recognizing what is translatable and not. I was listening a lot to Sean Ryan. I don't know if you're familiar with him and his podcast. Highly recommend it. I mean, he's got a few million subscribers and he essentially just interviews veterans and just amazing stories. And listening to those stories on Sean Ryan's podcast, I think it's called The Sean Ryan Show, I was recognizing over time that I was applying their stories to my own experiences and thinking to myself, oh, well, that's pretty neat to know other people experienced that. And it wasn't just me. It's not just some crazy thing I was doing or thinking. And that's kind of when it clicked to say, in my experience, it was pretty cool to find translatable skills from military to built environment on construction sites, building properties. And kind of those two dynamics just made sense to me to say, all right, well, let's create this niche and I'll build roadmap for vets in built environment.
It's awesome. So let's talk about a little bit of your military experience before we get into your transition. Tell us how you got in the military, what you did in the military, and then we'll get into your transition.
Yeah. So potentially throw for a little bit loop here. So I'm actually a dual citizen, Israel and US. And what happened there was I served in special operations in the Israeli military, which is a unit that's similar to, it's kind of like a mix of Green Beret and Ranger Battalion in the US. In that experience, again, cross-trained with a lot of US military peeps, like those two units that I just mentioned, lots of similar enemies per se, lots of similar deployments. And coming back to the US, I think there's a lot of similarities in terms of all of those, you know, key points that I just mentioned in terms of transition periods, in terms of experience, in terms of environment of experience, i.e. Afghanistan, Iraq, and, you know, made a lot of great connections with US military people. And that's where, you know, kind of all of these elements combined got me to where I am today.
Cool. So I know you began your real estate career as an owner's rep. Mm-hmm. Was that right out of grad school, before grad school? Talk to us about your timeline from an education standpoint and then into the professional environment.
Yeah. So when I finished my service, I started undergrad. I was up in Boston and I just studied business. When I finished with my undergrad degree, I moved to New York City. Essentially, just through network, I ended up meeting with a family office developer. We were doing multifamily high-rise developments in the Northeast, generally speaking. And, you know, I didn't necessarily have a desire or intention to go into development and construction. It just happened. And what intrigued me about entering the market and end up having kind of a, timeline of recognizing it was the industry for me was, first of all, building a tangible asset, something that has design elements to it. So those are two just things that I enjoy personally. Then what I learned as I was on job sites was how cool it was and how similar to that like military dynamic, which is interacting with people of all sorts from all backgrounds in a chaotic environment and always needing to problem solve. So it was a really neat kind of comparable experience that, helped me excel in the space itself. Through that experience, I got a master's degree as well in business.
Nice. Everything you're saying, we agree at MCFA and maybe, on the podcast specifically about the veteran transition and the tangible asset, seeing a mission come to fruition. I mean, I joke often that like just power washing my house sometimes is seeing something happen and the gratification of a job done and accomplished in front of you, not just a to-do item crossed off of a sheet of paper, but actually physically seeing it get better is the mission-oriented side. And then I agree, the team, the leadership, the camaraderie, the chaos, and the cohesion that needs to come together in order for all of these somewhat disparate white collar, blue collar elements to all come together to accomplish a team sport at the end of the day. I think it's an attractive proposition for not just veterans, a lot of people, and we have to do a better job as an industry being attractive and getting ourselves out there, because we are competing a lot with, the engineering professionals, and a lot of the engineering professionals are getting attracted to maybe the money, maybe something else of tech and Silicon Valley and Uber and Meta and et cetera. So that's where I think I want to introduce and understand the second transition you made, which was from a professional in the built environment to now a technology startup. Talk to us. Yeah, what's the technology? What was the moment that you said, I can do it better?
Yeah, great segue there. Appreciate the plug in that regard. So basically what happened was, real early on in my career working for those builders, my business partner, a longtime friend known from military as well, kind of like a copy and paste story. Anyways, both of us sat down after, again, we started our careers and said, managing hundreds of millions of dollars on Excel and email chains is just not the way. It can't be the way. So of course, we first looked at the market for, what products exist to help us manage these processes, help us retain data, help us be protected, and quickly came across the typical legacy products. We were rejected by the companies we worked for, two different companies, similar family offices, nonetheless different.
What were you rejected for? Cost?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, you're getting there.
I was going to say, it's even more than just the cost. It was the means of pricing. So, and that is percentage of ACV. So essentially taking a piece of your project was what the developers you work for said, yeah, like, get out of here. I mean, we're not giving a technology like a percentage of our project value. We're not opening our books.
That's interesting. I don't know who the competition was. I didn't realize that was how pricing happened there. I was thinking like if maybe they wanted you to get 20 licenses and you needed 3, but I agree. Construction value is not the answer. All right, correct. Go on. Yeah.
So that's when we said, all right, you know what? Just forget all of this. We're going to just start building a product for ourselves. So that was the inception of it, is we literally just started to code solutions that we needed, solutions we knew existed, because, we weren't first to the market. We're not first movers. And we kind of just understood what worked well in these other products, what we needed as site operators, what our stakeholders were telling us, right, between design teams, contracting teams, all the other teams involved. Mm-hmm. And slowly but surely, over the course of like 3 or 4 years, essentially, we built out this product, JetBuild. And at that point, after about 3.5-4 year mark, we basically got together again and we're like, well, damn, we just created this end-to-end system that is managing a lot of construction value, volume, and working really well. Maybe let's think about this as an actual business model. So at that point, we kind of threw the product around, threw the brand around to builders in our industry and our network to see, their take, right? Have actual external users on the project outside of our stakeholders who we were paying. So, they're going to use it. So they onboarded Jet at the time, which was really cool because we got some great feedback from them. We're able to implement it, revise the product a little bit more, tune it up a little bit more. And at that point, we were ready to really focus on Jet as a business. We raised capital, an early kind of angel friends and family kind of round that has gone really well, because what we were able to do was essentially build out this very robust system over the course of several years. And that capital allowed us to really just close the gaps that otherwise existed while we focused on building the brand and innovating. So with that fundraising round, with that VC backing, we've since essentially closed all the gaps that existed against legacy product, against other products in the market competition. We've since innovated. And how we do that, I think, is really neat, which is what we like to say is we'll collect best practices from our clients and from our users, implement them so that our end users, our clients, are using a product of best practices. And what's really also neat about that, and I think interesting about friction in the industry, going back to this like technology and innovation, right? Is I think when technology hit our industry, started, I guess that was, I don't know, in the 2000s, early 2000s, when it started to get implemented, these were all technologies, tech stacks. I mean, technology was at a different place, right? I mean, think about your phone in 2000 versus today, right? So when technology was being implemented on projects that are complex, that are being, you know, worked on with dozens of stakeholders, which are all different companies, right? This is clunky tech at that time. So what ends up happening is the industry now is ingrained in terms of like their thought, their perception on technology. And they're thinking, well, you know, this is tough to use. This kind of sucks to use it, right? It takes a long onboarding period to understand. I got a million other things happening. And I think that has compounded a little bit in a negative way to today, where when you look at core tech stack, right? I'm not talking about complex modeling. I'm not talking about like building BIM and Revit models. I'm just talking about your core management solution. So again, think about your phone. If I handed you a phone, are you going to need some complicated onboarding period for that and training and setup? I mean, no, you're not going to.
Right.
So the same thing for this core tech stack is what we're trying to really innovate the market, right? We're trying to inform people that no, this is what happens when you implement modern technology, just like when you get a new phone, right? You're going to understand how to run an RFI. You're going to understand how to build out a schedule. You're going to understand how to run through your bid management process and your budget and your pay apps, so on and so forth. So that's kind of the vision of what we're doing here, is to say, let's pause, let's do a break right now. Look at what modern tech can do as your core tech stack, not charge you a percentage of your project value, and then now allow you from there to innovate, right? Now you can start adopting AI safety products. You can start adopting AI concrete pouring for safety. Now you can start integrating all these into your core tech stack, which is Jet, and have a true data hub without getting price gouged and with modern dashboards and just modern core tech.
Are other systems feeding into this?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So is Primavera or are you disrupting a Primavera?
Yeah. So we are also disrupting a Primavera for a scheduling tool. I think that there probably are still use cases for Primavera if you're building, I don't know, like a hospital or like a nuclear power plant. But for majority of projects, we're doing everything that one would accomplish or schedule on a Primavera as well.
So who is the number one, and maybe you want to say three because you don't want to be singling anybody out, but who are you competing with, and is your differentiator the fact that you're not doing construction, you know, pricing based on construction volume?
That's a good way to put it, is three competitors. So you have Procore, you have Autodesk, Construction Cloud, and you have Trimble, for example. So those would be three competing products.
Yep.
Those three products now, as we see it, are really focused on your enterprise GC, for example, where like any enterprise company in any industry, I mean, they're almost like naturally attracted to clunkiness and difficult systems. I mean, that's a whole nother side point. So for everyone,
we operate in the built environment in many ways. It's called the AEC industry. And I say that stands for, it's not architect, engineering, constructor. It's archaic, expensive, and complicated.
Nice. Yes.
We're birds of a feather when we look at our industry.
Yeah, exactly. So for everyone else, that's not your $1 trillion a year builder and 10,000 employee company. Why do you need to get price gouged? Why do you need this technology that was built on dated tech stacks? Why can't you look to simplicity? Why can't you look to support? And those are our differentiators, really, is to say, We're going to provide you with modern technology that is easy to understand and easy to use, not only for you, right, as the GC or as the developer, but then also that's a domino, a compounding effect, right? How about all your other stakeholders who are not diving deep into this product? How are they going to use it to support you in your project, right? So collaboration needs to happen. So focus is not only on the license holder. It's also to say it's simpler, easier to use for everyone. And then the last kind of kicker, which I think is the true value add, is what I mentioned before as it relates to that best practices concept, is with modern technology, and again, natural to any industry when you're looking at enterprise versus an agile company, we just have the ability to implement at a pace that these legacy companies can't even fathom, right? They can't imagine, right? Because they got to go through chain of command. They have a trillion people to review it, to, you know, who's responding to begin with to client feedback, right? For us, I mean, it's a quick turnaround because our technology is modern and it's simple, it's effective, it's organized. And therefore, our turnaround times, I mean, it shocks people because they're used to, like I was mentioning before, right? It's kind of this notion that's ingrained, which is to say, no one's gonna take my feedback seriously. You know, what's the implementation time, a year? I mean, now we're talking about hours.
Wow, that's awesome. Inspiring People and Places is brought to you by MCFA. MCFA is a CVE-verified, service-disabled, veteran-owned small business. At MCFA, our why is to inspire people and places through project leadership. We provide planning, strategy, program management, and construction management support services to a wide variety of public and private sector clients. All right, so who's the buyer? Is it anybody that has a construction project going on should get this? Like, I am renovating my house, or I'm flipping a house down the street, versus I'm building a new bridge across the Hudson and everything in between. Is it everybody? I know you said maybe Primavera still should be the go-to for a complex nuclear reactor or a hospital. But yeah. I mean, tell me, who is your target audience? And without me asking like specifically for a pitch, why do I buy this today?
Yeah, so our ICP, ideal customer profile or target audience, is kind of that mid-range. And I actually hate this word in construction development because it's really funny how you could have a developer with, I don't know, 20 people in-house building a $2 billion development, right? So it's basically, again, just not the enterprise, simply because that's just a beast on its own, same as any industry. So really anyone but enterprise who is building at scale. So what I mean by that is, to your question, if you're renovating your kitchen, I mean, the reality is you could probably use Excel for that. I mean, it's not so much or so complex. So I like to say ground up homes, apartment remodels at scale. So like some asset managers that are, you know, flipping 50, 100 apartments at a time, ground up is certainly our key demographic, because that's the most complex scenario. Mm-hmm. And then everything and anything in between, right? I mean, ground up warehousing, a bridge, for example, I mean, whatever has scale to it. And then I guess the last question, why should someone use it? I think about my experience in the industry, thinking about those early days of using Excel and email, and it is unbelievably inefficient. Not only is it unbelievably inefficient, no data is retained in that fashion, in that, I don't know, track of using siloed Excel files. And then last but not least, you're not going to have protection over your project because nothing is linked in a defensible manner. I mean, you have dozens of email chains, again, siloed Excel files versus, for example, a central system where data is indexed and logged. Everything is tied to its specific function. So you're not going to be confused if you're responding to an RFI or a bid, because I mean, that would be pretty difficult to get confused over that. So not only does it kind of protect you as you build your project, it allows productivity for all of your stakeholders. And also it prepares you for the future, which is AI, inevitably so.
That's great.
Mm-hmm.
Pricing.
Yeah. So pricing is dynamic. So it'll depend on a few things. One is, first and foremost, of course, how many projects you have. We'll first of all, always offer unlimited users and the entire product. So no cost plus, no limitation on users. And we encourage, that's what I was going to say, we always encourage as many users as possible, because that allows for centralized operation, right? Centralized command, centralized data.
Yeah.
So those are standard. And then in terms of how we price, it'll essentially depend on how many projects do you have actively at a time? How many years do you want to lock in this contract? That'll depend on, you know, what kind of rates I can provide. That's pretty much kind of the two factors that we go by. Flat fees always. So we don't mess around with, this is the last I guess, shade that I'll throw on these other companies where I hear this. I mean, this is a crazy statement that I hear from people I talk to in industry and clients who used to use legacy. They literally say to me, they are afraid to upload certain information sets because they're going to eventually get audited by these companies and their price is going to hike exponentially.
Mm.
It's a crazy concept, right? You have these legacy companies saying we're innovation in the industry, we're technology, yet their clients are literally afraid to use their technology because of how they model their pricing. So that's nuts. So we don't do that.
That is interesting. I don't know if that's shade. It's almost like Better Business Bureau. It's it's good due diligence.
If anyone listening is, I don't know, real estate or SaaS lawyer, reach out if you hear anything that's funky there.
All right. We're about leadership. We're about empowering project leaders. Talk to me about one, leadership lessons learned, and two, reemphasize what problem you were solving with this technology and how, if you were a construction leader today, how this would be making your life so much easier.
So the why, I'm going to reemphasize that. The why is, how does one manage multiple companies, lots and lots of money, strict deadlines and budgets, when information and accountability is not transparent in a single place and it's not accessible easily, quickly, right? Now, also, I'm going to tie in that future outlook, which is, again, data, right? We have to start wrapping our heads around, we need to index and own data, right? We can't continue allowing it to just be siloed because it's going to eventually change everything that we do in every industry, day-to-day, personal, professional. So those would be kind of the whys and what you need to look for in the future. I actually want to also add a third element here, which is recruitment, employees, right? So if you're looking to understand how you're going to have talent retention or attraction, right? How are you going to attract talent? Well, if you're not using technology, what of this younger generation is going to want to work with your company if you're on nothing, right? If you're not using tech and if you're not using modern tech, I mean, they grew up with a iPhone in their brains essentially. So you got to start looking at tech, right? In order to attract talent.
And let me make a shout for your whole point around the tech stack. And I think the terminology is modern tech stack versus legacy. You brought up the fact that I can turn an iPhone on. Actually, let's not use me. Let's use my four-year-old can turn an iPhone on and knows how to navigate, right? I just recently heard one of Oracle's senior executives talk about technology the same exact way, that training shouldn't be a huge budget in an enterprise technology upgrade because modern technology should be so easy for somebody to navigate and do their job inside of that technology that training should be 10 minutes of familiarization with the app. So you're telling me that JetBuild is going to allow my PM, no matter who they've worked for, where they've worked, when they show up, maybe they're military, maybe they're government, maybe they're Procore or legacy user, they're going to be able to show up at my company and quickly be not only functional, but efficient in using the technology.
Absolutely. I mean, first of all, I need to find that report because that sounds like it needs to be our website. Second is absolutely, yes. So long as we're not talking about someone who doesn't understand industry process and operations, right? I mean, that's a different story. Granted, it is a great tool for them to learn process and operations.
Yeah, for sure.
However, if you are accustomed to what an RFI, what a submittal means, what a Gantt schedule looks like, what a bid process looks like, what meeting minutes look like, then absolutely, we're averaging between 30 to 40 minute onboarding time and you're up and running, you're going, you're using it. We have clients that literally have just signed up, started run with the project need and didn't want any onboarding or training whatsoever. That's a testament to exactly to
ease of use.
Ease of use.
That's great.
And then to kind of answer that leadership model and another reason why, right? So I remember in the role of anyone who's managing projects, whether you're on the GC side or you're a CM, external CM, external owner rep, or on the developer side, I mean, what you need to do is compile information, right? Communicate that information to your teams accordingly, make decisions according to the information that you're compiling. How are you doing that if you're manually pulling information from Excel, PDFs, Words, emails into your private singular Excel file? Or is it easier to click two buttons because the platform, the Jet, for example, has already compiled that information for you to then in 2-3 clicks, select a report and understand status, understand performance, understand schedule, whatever it may be. So, I mean, that's the leadership ability that you get from a central platform.
I love it. I'm sold. All right, we're going to switch gears. You're a CM, familiar with the built environment. You're now a technology founder, which I can only imagine how complex leading a CTO and others in development of a technology like this. Talk to us about some rapid fire questions here. What are you reading? What's your most recommended book?
What I'm reading right now is by Chris Voss. He's a former FBI negotiator. The name of the book literally is dropping my mind, but look, Chris
never,
Voss.
Never Split the Difference.
Awesome. Yeah, awesome.
I got you.
I think it's just such interesting thought process in terms of how do you deal with people, right? Communicate with people. So I definitely recommend it. My favorite book is probably top of mind, or one of my favorites is The Power of Now. And that's more so like I'll call it like a wellness and being present type book. I find that to be like biblical to a sense, where it's just incredible insight into how to just be present.
So because you hit presence, I usually ask, what do you do outside? But I saw in your bio, we got a 500-hour yoga teacher training. Talk to us about what drove you to become a yogi.
Yeah. So typical post-military injuries, you know, back, foot, shoulder. I was dealing with those for a really, really long time. It was causing a lot of just friction in day-to-day life and sleep. I tried all of the typical methodologies for years, the PT, the different types of training, all except for kind of what I will consider Eastern, right, practice, like yoga, for example. So at a certain point, and this actually happened in COVID when, you know, just less things were happening, especially for me. I was based in New York City at the time. And I said, all right, you know what? I've been struggling with this for a really long time. Yoga, I've never engaged with or been intrigued by, because it's not that, you know, just put your head down and smash through the challenge type of practice. It's not linear in the sense that, you know, you can do 10 pushups for every day for a week, and then you should expect to be able to do 12, 15, right? So it's always been something that I was, I guess, afraid of or just not willing to engage with. And finally, I dove into it and recognized that not only did it really help mitigate a lot of issues that I was having because of the mobility and flexibility, calisthenic strength in mobility angles that it provides, but it also taught me breath work, which is pranayama, which is a part of yoga, which unlocked another whole entire different world of wellness for me. So that's how I got into it. I practice, I don't know, 5 to 7 times a week now, and really recommend it. My overarching kind of pitch about yoga is, if you want to increase the longevity of quality of life, then you have to start looking at something that's mobility involved.
Good one. All right. If you could have dinner with 3 people, dead or alive, who would they be?
Oh man, I'm going to go Elon Musk. Wow. That's the first one that's funny that comes to mind, probably because I see he just pops up everywhere, right? I don't know, George Washington, because why not? A third one. Well, anyways, I'm drawing a blank, so I'll stick with those two.
All right, fair enough. Favorite quote?
So it was actually from the Sean Ryan show that I heard someone say it. I'm going to, you know, a veteran say it. I'm going to botch the literal quote, but I'll say the purpose, which is, if you see that there's something that's bothering you, if there's an issue, if there's friction in something, and you're not addressing it, well, how do you ever expect it to change?
You've got me reflecting on that one, because I feel like I heard a similar quote.
There's definitely a lot of like variations of that, but what I was saying was kind of like the purpose of the.
I'm with you. So there's if not me, who? If not now, when?
Exactly.
Shout out to the Travis Mannion Foundation. Cool. All right. What do you want to say to all of the project managers, project leaders, construction managers, owners out there, whether it's about jet build or whether it's about just making the world a better place? Any closing inspiration for us?
Yeah. I mean, I want to say, you know what? You are all awesome, because you are building the built environment, right? You're building things that we are all engaged with day to day, whether that's our office, our home, our roads, our schools, our hospitals. So I want to give a shout out and credit to those site operators, right, that are literally building our environments, because I think that I don't think they get enough credit. That's my piece. So props to you. Congrats and thank you.
The way to get more credit is to make it easier and less confusing and less chaotic. So use JetBuild. To bring calm to the projects. I think I'm going to hang on here with Adam and talk to him about us piloting this in some of our projects. But I do think that we as an industry need to do a better job of embracing technology. Hiding from it is only going to make us more complicated and more expensive. Embracing it and figuring out how is AI going to help us build better? How is technology going to make us more efficient, more effective? Maybe make your life a little less stressful, because instead of having to respond to 17 different emails, you've got it all in one place on one platform. So I'm excited to find out more about Adam. Adam, where can people find you?
I'm very active on LinkedIn. So Adam Stark on LinkedIn. Definitely can find me on the podcast, right? The Veterans Who Build Show, and our website, www.jet.build.
And just because I have to ask, no relation to Stark Industries and Iron Man, right?
I mean, I wish, man. You know, maybe in another lifetime I was, but yeah, just wish.
All right. Thanks, Adam, for your time. Great meeting you, and appreciate everything you're doing at JetBuild.
Thanks so much, man. Appreciate the time.
Hey, everybody. If you're enjoying this show, do us a favor and subscribe to Inspiring People and Places on iTunes, Spotify, or your favorite podcast hosting platform. We'd also greatly appreciate if you left us a review and shared this with other entrepreneurial public servants and all your friends and family in the AEC space. Be sure to visit our website, www.mcfaglobal.com. Sign up for our newsletter to stay in touch with us and learn about all of the projects and clients we're helping. Last but not least, we are hiring. We are always hiring. Do us a favor. Take a look at what jobs we have open. Contact us through our website or connect with me on LinkedIn. Until next time, have a great rest of your week and a great weekend.